Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by Sir Jared of House Gebhardt. Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into chapter 20, Eddard 4, with Game of Thrones and Viserys 2 in A World of Ice and Fire. Actually today, guys, the rereads might be a little shorter than they have been in the past.
Yeah, the Viserys chapter is literally a page.
Yeah, it's kind of yeah. If that, so
that's okay. We have a kind of lengthier raven at the end.
So. Yeah, we have a fun raven at the end that we want to talk about. So that will be a lot of fun. Real quick at the top of the show, I always like to mention ways in which you can send in ravens. Send those to btkcast@gmail.com. That's how they get read on the show and discussed for follow up Friday. If you want to send in a voicemail or something, we got our number is 614-547-2350. Yeah, that's it. Let's jump into Small Council.
Yeah. Pretty solid little Sunday here. You're listening to it on Monday. We always record on Sundays.
Right.
Watched France.
Yeah.
Wow.
Win
the World Cup, man.
That was a good game.
Kind of an onslaught there of goals there in the second
4-2,
second
I think.
Half.
Yeah, that was a good game.
Yeah, so that was pretty intense.
And actually, Sir Matt, here in August, we're gonna have to decide soon on our team.
We are.
On our soccer team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I'm still working on it, so.
Yeah. You know, we can't wait 2 weeks in and see who's, you know, jumping out ahead.
Right, but, we got to get that going. Lord Adam Park and I were talking, and I was like, I need to understand the leagues. There's like a Champions League and a Premier League and like a second division all this stuff. And he's like, well, then I believe there's other leagues too. There's like Real Madrid they play in. Like the Spanish league.
I think we need to hit up Sir, I'm gonna hit up Sir Robert here. We're gonna talk to Sir. He's actually lives over there. Let's see what he thinks.
Yeah, Lady Jade knows as well. I need the rules explained to me first, so that way I can kind of figure it out.
Yeah,
where to go from there. But so other than that, just kind of a chill day. Sir Ezra and I, sometimes we like to take a walk as we plan for the show.
Yeah.
We kind of like, okay, here's what I'm thinking. We meet up and we'll go do that. Today we kind of went out and did like a little walk on a trail. Sometimes we just go to like the mall or, I don't know, something and just walk around. Barnes & Noble usually is a go-to
spot
for us. And we go look at books.
Spend all of our money too.
Yeah. And so today I was like, I'm thinking, let's go to the trail and walk. And it was like the King's Road.
Dude, it looked just like the King's
path
Road.
Yeah. On, you know,
it,
like.
We'll have to take a picture next time because it looks just like the King's Road.
Yeah, probably would be.
Which is pretty neat. Trying to think of other updates. I wanted to mention this last time. Sir Ezra is actually, some of you do listen to other podcast projects, and I won't mention them by name, but I am on for like a couple weeks, they've asked me to be on another podcast there. And I don't know that they're treating me very well over there, Sir Matt, you know?
Whoa.
You know?
Can't have that.
Yeah, I think that I've been slammed a couple times, you know, here and there. They're just... You know, the what is Game of Thrones question came up, so...
Yeah, it's okay. I know the podcast you're speaking of, and I'll just say this, Game of Thrones is bigger. It's a fact.
If you happen to be a listener of that project, feel free to defend Sir Ezra the Watchful on that podcast. Actually, they're treating me very nicely, but I always like to, you know, make things bigger than they are. So, anyways, other updates, though, I think everything's... going solid. This week we are recording. By the end of the week, this weekend people will have the next Black Council episode. So Sir Matt and I have been reading that, and we're ready to go. We're going to record that this upcoming week and post it this weekend. So you guys should have that ready to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just some show news here. First of all, so Emmy nominations came out. And so the way it kind of works is like actually, so it's odd because Game of Thrones has been off this year because they came out so late in 2 years ago. They actually were disqualified from that last year's Emmys. So this year they're eligible.
They're eligible. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of weird the way it works. And they did lead all of TV series with 22 nominations.
22 Jeez.
Emmy nominations. Yeah. So just kind of
that's
interesting
great.
There. Now, Game of Thrones, I believe, has the most Emmy awards of any show of all time.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad you brought that up.
And it passed a couple years ago. My favorite television show of all time, Frasier. I don't know why. I just watched it a bunch when I was a kid, and I've seen it like a million times. But yeah, so it's great. Now, two of my favorite TV shows, well, they're the best ever because they have most awards.
Yeah, yeah.
So, so there's that, which is super cool. And it has been kind of reported around the internet that the prequel show will start filming in October.
That's crazy, dude. Can that be? And that's rumor mill going around.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that would be radical. But, I mean, think about this, though. It wouldn't necessarily need to. I don't know if they want to get ahead on this, but if they want to kind of continue that with that Game of Thrones wave, you know, and you want to kind of fill what would be the next season, but you're going backwards, you're going to your prequel stuff, you'd want to have it ready to go, wouldn't you? You know, you wouldn't want to wait a couple of years or whatever. You'd probably want to just keep right on, you know, moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So, because you're riding that wave of success is what you're doing. So, that's exciting.
Yeah. Also, so I guess my guess for that is, now don't quote me on any of this, but next week, July 19th through the 22nd, is Comic-Con. So this coming week. So when you're listening to this, Tuesday, I think, right? That'd be the 19th?
Yeah.
Sounds about right. Thursday. So I don't know. I'm trying to pull up the Comic-Con schedule here to see if there is going to be a Game of Thrones exhibit or like panel. You know, there's always so many panels. But my guess is if the show is filming in October, let's just say it is, we should at least get, I mean, we couldn't get a trailer or anything because they don't have anything filmed.
Yeah.
But my guess would be that we would at least get like a title and perhaps a...
Like just the producer or like the...
Yeah, like who... Well, you know, I think we know who the producer... I think they
I mean, that person coming out. Or
but at least like, who's the cast? Are we going to get like a cast of who it is?
Huh.
Like maybe a little bit about it would be kind of my guess. And maybe we also get some, maybe we get like a teaser trailer for the main show. Comic-Con seems like that'd be the place to do it.
Maybe.
Like a teaser trailer or something. I don't know. You know?
Be radical. Well, we'll have to keep our eyes out, you know.
You got to be Sir Ezra the Watchful.
Yeah. Yeah. I got 1,000 eyes in one, so I'll have to, you know. Or do I? No, I don't. But anyways, yeah, we'll have to take a look on that. So I kind of thought that we wouldn't actually get much because it's kind of landing weird, you know, the way in which the show is wrapping up. I'm not sure if there was a time to cut a trailer, you know, and all that good stuff. Who knows? We'll see. That's the prime time to do it, though, you know?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm trying to look here. Yeah, I'm not seeing anything about... Oh, I may have skipped past it. Hold on a second here. Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones. That's a fan discussion. Gosh dang it.
Gosh dang it.
So there's a fan discussion at whatever. So, okay, maybe nothing at Comic-Con this year.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway.
That's all right, though. We'll keep looking for it. So, yeah, as we said this week, the Maestro's Study, which we're about to jump into. Anything else for Small Council? Patreon series, everything is ready to go. I mentioned that. T-shirts are out. We've got a couple of you who just signed up this past month.
Yeah.
And we're going to hit you guys up. I think we got two or three people who signed up. So we're going to hit you guys up for T-shirts. Get your sizes, send those out to you. So you should be hearing from us soon. If not, reach out to us. And also update those Westerosi words. You know, send us your house words and things. And if you don't see them in the doc, then that means we've missed them or they're buried in hundreds and hundreds of Facebook messages between Sir Matt and yourself.
Sometimes that happens.
So it's just hard to sift back through all of them. So just hit us up again. It's not going to hurt our feelings. Hey, guys, you forgot to put my words in on the doc, or, you know, when we introduce the show, we like to have your house words and stuff. So, okay. Let's head over to the Maester study. Sir Matt?
All right. Viserys the Second. So the last 2 weeks we covered Baelor the Blessed and Daeron the First, the Young Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those were Aegon the Third's sons. And so they are both dead now. So the throne passes. And they didn't have children. So the throne passes to Aegon the Third's brother. Am I correct in that, Sir Ezra?
Yeah, well, you just had me for a second. So, Daeron, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
Aegon the Third.
Aegon the Third, you're right.
Yeah, has two sons, Baelor and Daeron, and they both die. Neither of them have children. They both die, so the throne then passes to...
His brother.
His brother.
That's right.
Viserys the Second.
Yep, yep.
Who was Hand of the King.
Yeah.
So, Viserys the Second. Though both of the sons of King Aegon the Third were dead... Well, okay, I guess I should have just... Read the first line.
No, the first line.
We would have been. We would have get up. Though both of the sons of King Aegon III were, I was just testing you.
Yeah,
were dead. His three daughters yet survived, and there were some amongst the small folk, and even some lords who felt the Iron Throne should, by rights, now pass to Prince Dana.
Mm-hmm.
There were few, however, a decade. A decade of isolation in the Maiden Vault have left Dana and her sisters without powerful allies, and memories of the woes that had befallen the realm when last a woman set the Iron Throne were still fresh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's dragons. Last time that happened, buddy.
Yep. Dana the Defiant was seen by many lords as being wild and unmanageable. Besides, and wanton as well, for a year earlier she had given birth to a bastard son she named Daemon, whose sire was steadfast refused to name.
You know, you said something the other day, and I was questioning it, but you said that Daemon would be possibly his eldest bastard.
Yeah.
And I think you're right.
Yeah.
I need to go double check, but I actually...
I think it is.
For some reason, I didn't think that he was, and I think that this is during his youth when he's still fooling around, and, you know, and Aegon the Unworthy.
It's possible there are other lowborn ones.
Yeah, there might be. This is his highborn. It's called the Great Bastards. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Well, it's when that's the whole argument is when he legitimizes them. Well, to me,
isn't he the elder son? Yeah,
he's the elder son. So that would make him the heir.
Right. Yes.
And he has the sword.
And he's got the sword. I know. Yep. So I'm going to have to do some more digging on that because I hadn't even crossed my mind until last week when you said that. And I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
So good stuff.
But the precedents of the Great Council of 101 and the Dance of Dragons were therefore cited, and the claims of Baelor's sisters were set aside. Instead, the crown passed to his uncle, the King's Hand, Prince Viserys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, that was actually... they didn't do that, right? Viserys the First didn't do that, did he? You know, he kind of, you know, decided not to cite... the Great Council of 101. So they get to kind of pick and choose when they want to cite it.
Yeah, it seems like.
So.
Yeah, and I think this next line here is the most important. It has been written that while Daeron Ward, and Baelor prayed, Viserys ruled.
True.
For 14 years, he served his hand to his nephews, and before them served his brother, King Aegon III. It is said he was the shrewdest hand since Septon Barth, though his good efforts were diminished in the reign of the Broken King, who lacked any desire to please his subjects or win their love. In his Lives of Four King, Grand Maester Caith seems to hold little opinion, good or bad, of Viserys. But there are those who say that by rights the book should be about five kings, Viserys included, and yet Viserys is passed over for a discussion of his son, Aegon the Unworthy, instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's like all those years that he had sort of guided the other kings, you know, helped his brother, and then his brother's two sons, you know, and then finally it passes to him, and then he rules here for a time. It's all of the, you know, his son is such a, I don't know, we talk about Aegon the Unworthy all the time, you know, and so that kind of overshadows any of the accomplishments that he might have, you know, had.
Yeah, and actually, this chapter is so short. That's pretty much the chapter, to be completely honest. Just talks about the fact that Viserys had a couple children, and this is really where it goes. The eldest was Aegon, born in the Red Keep in 135 AC, after Viserys returned from Lys. He was a robust lad who grew to be handsome and charming and also irresponsible. Devoted to his pleasure, he caused his father much trouble and toil and the realm much pain. This is, of course, Aegon the Fourth, who we've talked a little bit about already, just because they mention him in other chapters. He's, you know, the father of Daemon Waters, as we'll get to.
Yeah, you know, and actually, real quick, Sir Matt, when let me open this in a new tab here. I want to look at so Viserys' children. You had just mentioned, right, King Aegon. King Aegon the Fourth, the Unworthy, right? Queen Nereus Targaryen, and then Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight is his son.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so when you go back and you actually study Aegon the Unworthy, and you look at when he was alive, who was king? He actually lived through all these other kings, like he's a cousin.
He just didn't become king until late.
Right, because it had to pass over to his side of had to swing his way, and so it is interesting to kind of look at this other side, you know, as it swishes, as it moves over to Viserys, to the brother, you know, and then the line will kind of go down through Viserys the second. It's just kind of interesting that he was there during all of those times. What was young Aegon the Unworthy doing? I mean, we know he was hooking up with, you know, the maidens from the Maiden Vault, and things, but you know, his life is very different from his brother, Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight.
Yeah.
So, you know,
totally
Prince Aemon has, we've been talking about him for several kings now, you know, and Baelor rescues him. He goes down with Daeron, you know, and fights in the Dornish Wars and things like that. So it's just interesting to remember when you look at a timeline, the way these guys all kind of, you know, they all lived among each other and things.
Yeah, to this very day, some call him the noblest knight who ever lived and one of the most storied names to ever serve in the Kingsguard. Then the last of Viserys' children was his only daughter, Nereus, born in 138 AC. She had skin so pale that it seemed almost translucent, men said. She was of small frame, made smaller by having little appetite and with very fine features. The singers wrote songs in praise of her eyes, a deep violet in hue and very large, framed by pale lashes.
Yeah.
She loved Aemon best of her brothers, for he knew how to make her laugh, and he had something to of the same piety that she possessed, while Aegon did not. She loved the Seven as dearly as she loved her brother, if not more so, and might have been a septa if her lord father had allowed it, but he did not. And Viserys instead wed her to his son Aegon in 153 AC with King Aegon III's blessing. So that's another thing, is that this chapter is kind of weird because it really has to go back and say, well, all of this stuff actually happened to Viserys.
Yeah.
But we're telling you about it now when he's king. So it's, that's another thing about this book, the way it's kind of written. Sometimes it's weird.
Well, actually, that's why going to his wiki page actually will help you a lot. When you look back, they've done a nice job.
You can see his life more,
Yeah, you can see his early life. You can see his role during the Dance of Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, he's been around for a long time.
Exactly.
He's now just king. And really, he doesn't get the chance to do much as king because he's a king for a short time.
It's just because the way the line passes is very, it didn't go through the sons and younger children like it should have.
You know? And, you know, we see that sometimes in our history.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a history buff here, so allow me to nerd out here
for
a second. You know, like John Adams, if you want to look at somebody in American history, my God, he's one of the founding fathers. You know, he does so many great things before he becomes president, and he's one of my favorite presidents ever. Mm-hmm. But before he becomes president, and then he kind of has a terrible presidency. And so, like, people kind of even forget, like, what did he do as president? You know, kind of a thing. Richard Nixon is almost the same thing. Of course, he had, unfortunately, an enormous scandal that's what most people remember. But before that, he had a lot of really good, like, foreign policy kind of things. And that's kind of a similar thing here with Viserys, is that he's king for so short of a time that it's just, you know, people don't really remember what he did as king.
Yeah. Good call. So his death, we're going to talk about his death, how it's kind of, there was, he only reigned for a year.
Yeah.
Less than a year.
Viserys II had within him the capacity to be a new conciliator.
Yeah.
For no king had ever been shrewder or more capable. Tragically, a sudden illness carried him away in 172 AC. It need not be said that some found the illness and its swiftness suspicious, but none dared speak their suspicion at the time. It would be more than a decade before the first accusation was put to paper that Viserys had been poisoned by none other than his successor, his son Aegon. Is there any truth to suspicion? We cannot say for certain, but given all of the infamous and corruptness of Aegon the Unworthy, it cannot be discounted.
Hmm. Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and then another thing real quick I wanted to point out here. I kind of skipped over this. Unfortunately, going back,
yeah.
Nerys, his daughter, that wanted to marry King Aemon, or Aemon, the Dragon Knight, and he didn't allow it. The singers say that Aemon and Nerys both wept during the wedding ceremony of her to Aegon IV, though the histories tell us Aemon quarreled with Aegon at the wedding feast, and it said that she wept during the bedding rather than the wedding. She didn't want to be married to Aegon IV.
Wow.
Well, and that causes some trouble later, and there's a whole theory isn't it about Darren? Darren.
Yeah. And that perhaps, you know, Darren the second. We'll get there. I'm going to piece it all together. But, like, that he possibly is the son of Aemon, the Dragon Knight.
Right.
You know, just being very, very different. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, wouldn't that make the Blackfyre line the true line?
I mean, yeah. I mean, it would be that he would. It's different. Yeah. It's not even like. Yeah, there's a lot of different speculation there. He would still be a Targaryen, but he wouldn't be, you know.
He wouldn't be the true rightful.
He's not in line, you know. Yeah. He's not in line unless the kingship were to pass to his brother, but it really can't because Aemon the Dragon Knight is, you know, one of the Kingsguard,
right?
You know, so he's taken a vow to, like, you know. So if that, yeah, it's tough. The whole line is like,
you know, it's. I will say though, it's crazy to think about the fact that next week we start essentially the Blackfyre Rebellion.
Yeah, with Aegon.
It's just
I know.
This book seemed a lot longer when we started.
Yeah.
And now we're like, wow, we're actually almost done with it.
Yeah, I know. We're getting towards we're getting to some of the Dunk and Egg stuff and
Robert's
things.
Rebellion and that's kind of it. There's stuff after that and we're gonna cover all that, of course. But it's more just like house histories and it's
well, really
a little
it's this Targaryen history because fire we wanted to make sure we got through that too, because Fire and Blood is such a big deal.
We'll
know?
Definitely be through it before Fire and Blood.
Yeah. You know, one thing I wanted to mention too, and Gus can hit me up later about this, but the idea that I'm on the you know, what do you call it, the train here that Aegon the Unworthy might have assassinated his father.
Oh, I definitely think he did.
And the reason being, think about it, like he didn't think that this kingship would pass over to his father.
Right.
I don't think that ever crossed his mind, you know, that he would always just be sort of like a prince or, you know, way down in line, et cetera, mm-hmm. and stuff. And he never really thought this would come to him. And when the opportunity does come, it's like time for dad to go.
Well, look, that's been the case with a lot of these people, a lot of the kings, really, you know, I mean, because after Aegon the Fourth, you know, a couple more down the line, Maekar.
Mm-hmm.
King, he doesn't think it's going to come to him. Egg definitely doesn't think it's going to come to him.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Just that was interesting. So. Yeah. Okay. Anything else on that?
No. And yeah, Viserys the Second. Unfortunately, really got to dive into the rest of him. Before that, and we've talked about him. But.
Yeah, you know what we might do is go back eventually and actually look at each person and look at their full life.
Right.
Because we have just been talking about their reign.
Right.
You know, but if you, even when we go to Aegon, as I said earlier, Aegon the Unworthy, Aegon the Fourth,
when we get to Egg, I mean, that's.
Yeah, you have his whole life leading
up
to his reign, you know?
Yeah.
And so you almost do like a character study. You get to kind of see what this character has gone through. So. Once we're done with the World of Ice and Fire, the Maester study will turn into those character studies. We'll pick a king and we'll go back and look at their whole life,
right? Or just a character and just kind of do overviews,
for sure,
or look at specific events and stuff like that. So
okay,
all right, okay. Well, now let's go ahead and head to the reread. Yeah, so last week we did Jon chapter 3. After training, Jon Snow is attacked by several other recruits, but saved by Donal Noy, who shows Jon the error of his ways. Then Jon meets up with Tyrion and learns from the Lord Commander that Bran has awoken. And then he also has kind of a little spout with Alistair Thorne.
Mm-hmm.
So this week we are reading Eddard the Fourth, but I thought we're going to continue this. Where were they at last time?
Yeah, I like
last
this.
POV?
I like this a lot, my friend, because this actually helps me. Because as you and I have said in doing our rereads, we're finding that going along with one character can really help you kind of figure out
break
that
things
story.
Down. Yep.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so Eddard 3, Arya and Joffrey tell King Robert very different stories concerning their fight near the Trident. When Sansa claims she does not remember, Queen Cersei demands the death of a direwolf. With Nymeria gone, Lady is sentenced to death instead.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, so that's where we last left off Eddard. And so this week, Eddard the Fourth.
Yeah,
Eddard, Chapter 4.
Yeah.
Immediately upon his arrival in King's Landing, Ned is summoned to a meeting of the Small Council to plan a tournament. Afterward, Littlefinger intercepts him and leads him to where Catelyn is hiding, where they plan their strategy for justice. So a couple weeks ago, we read the Catelyn chapter where she shows up and then she kind of talks to Littlefinger and Lord Varys.
Yeah.
And now Eddard is coming because she sailed there, so she got there a lot quicker.
Yeah.
So she's been there for probably at least a couple of days. I mean, yeah. before he does, if not a week or so.
Yeah.
And so,
but you know, it's funny, just though, like, as you said, the way this kind of works out, we were talking about John just in the last chapter, but you have to think back to Kat, and then you have to think back to Eddard, and where was he?
Yeah. And that's even the issue with doing the reread of a character arc is that sometimes you have to read another chapter to get that character. Like,
yeah.
Just because I was plowing through A Clash of Kings a couple weeks ago, and you could, like, if you wanted to do Tyrion, well, you'd also have to do Sansa chapters.
Yeah.
You'd also have to, well, Cersei doesn't have chapters in that book, but
it's their proximity. They're just.
Right, because they're mentioned. I mean, yeah. It'd be impossible to not get Tyrion with Sansa. So, and then later when you do Samwell chapters, I mean, John's there, and you know, so you kind of got to do them both.
Yeah. Yep. To start this off, one of the, and we're not going to go right to what, to the juicy stuff, but one of the biggest things, is to think back to the events that happened with King Robert.
Yeah.
And the fight between Arya and Joffrey, because it comes up, in a small way, but in a huge way, I think, in this chapter. So, you know,
really, you need to go back to Eddard 2, I would say.
Yeah.
Is really the chapter to kind of read in succession with this one, because it's just a lot of these things come up in the later chapters here. So,
yeah.
So I'm just going to go ahead and start off here.
Sure.
Eddard Stark rode through the towering bronze doors of the Red Keep, sore, tired, hungry, and irritable. He was still a horse, dreaming of a long hot soak, a roast fowl, and a feather bed, when the king's steward told him that Grand Maester Pycelle had convened an urgent meeting of the Small Council. The honor of the Hand's presence was requested as soon as it was convenient. "It will be convenient on the morrow," Ned snapped as he dismounted. The steward bowed very low. "I shall give the councillors your regrets, my lord." "No, damn it," Ned said. "I would not do. It would not do to offend the council before he had even begun. I will see them. Pray give me a few moments to change into something more presentable."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, different. That, you know, I actually like just in the show where he just like.
It's he almost, just walks in.
He just is. Walks in as yeah. is and is just like, this is who I am, you know. But it does show you that he kind of knows ways of the court and, you know, is going to, you know, borrow some clothes and things. So, and yeah, he marches in there. Valen Pool is mentioned in this. So his steward, you know, is with him. So, and I bring that up just because Jane Pool, you know, later on will be a player. And so you kind of need to remember that that's her father. Yeah, so the council has urgent need of me. See that my daughters find their bedchambers and tell Joy to keep them there. Arya is not to go exploring. Already knows that she's going to want to go check out this place, right? And he actually, before he gets into the council, one of the first things I think when he's in there, he asks if they should wait for Robert and Ser Barristan.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a couple of lines. That's a little bit into it, but I want to read here this real quick. So as Ned's walking in, this is where we kind of get the scene start is described to us and what's going on. And so Ned had come striding into the council chambers, bone tired and dressed in borrowed clothing, because he just grabbed some of like John Arryn's, to find four members of the small council. The council was richly furnished. Mirrorish carpets covered the floor instead of rushes, and in one corner, 100 fabulous beasts cavorted in bright paints on a carved screen from the summer aisles. Skip ahead a little bit here. The counselor Ned liked the least, the eunuch Varys, accosted him the moment he entered. "Lord Stark, I was grievous sad to hear about your troubles on the King's Road. We have all been visiting the Sept to light candles for Prince Joffrey. I pray for his recovery." His hand left powder stains on Ned's sleeve, and he smelled as foul and as sweet as flowers on a grave. Mm-hmm. "The gods have heard you," Ned replied. The prince goes stronger every day. And it's just, you know, Varys is totally just playing the part right here.
Yeah, for sure. That's interesting. You know, actually reading that description there, something caught my eye.
The Sphinxes.
The Sphinxes.
I know.
The Valyrian Sphinx. You know, that's crazy. The
Sphinx is the riddle.
You're right. Yeah. So, anyways, they've got a lot of stuff over there from Essos, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the free cities. So let's move on down here a little bit more. They're asking if he's well. You know, you must forgive me, but sometimes you look the very image of your brother, Robert, a poor copy, Renly says. So he's kind of going around greeting all the different, you know, counselors and stuff. And he comes to
Littlefinger.
Littlefinger, yeah, yeah. And he's Littlefinger. Yeah,
Renly
says,
Renly and Littlefinger kind of go back and forth a bit. Renly said with a they're talking about there are worse crimes. Renly said with a laugh, "The way you dress, for one." Littlefinger ignored the jibe. He eyed Ned with a smile on his lips that bordered on insolence. "I've hoped to meet you for some years, Lord Stark. No doubt Lady Catelyn has mentioned me to you." "She has," Ned replied with a chill in his voice. The sly arrogance of the comment rankled him. "I understand you knew my brother Brandon as well."
Mm-hmm.
Renly Baratheon laughed, very shuffled over to listen. Rather too well.
Very shuffled over to listen. Yeah.
Varys like, "Oh, that's great." Rather too well. "I still carry a token of his esteem. Did Brandon speak of me too?" "Often and with some heat," Ned said, hoping that would end it. He had no patience with this game they played, this dueling of words.
Mm-hmm.
I should have thought the heat ill suits you, Starks," Littlefinger said. "Here in the south, they say you are all made of ice and melt when you ride below the neck." "I do not plan on melting soon, Lord Baelish. You may count on it."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. So he has got the tensions there with Littlefinger already. And he doesn't, at this point, doesn't know, right? He's just gotten to King's Landing. He has no idea who else is in King's Landing.
Right.
Correct. You know, now Grand Maester Pycelle is next introduced. He asks him if he's doing well. And Pycelle, you know, remember, he's been around for a lot of different kings. He's been around here for a long time. And, you know, we kind of know, and you figure out pretty quickly that he is a, he's close with the Lannisters. We'll put mm-hmm. it that way, you know. Let's see. "Well enough for a man of my many years, my lord. Yet I do tire easily, I fear." They describe him as having wispy strands of white hair fringed with the broad, bald dome of his forehead above a kindly face. His maester's collar was no simple metal choker such as Lewin wore, but 24 heavy chains wound together in a ponderous metal necklace that covered him from throat to breast. The links were forged of every metal known to man. So he's got everything on there. I mean, mm-hmm. he's really got, he's real decked out. And so he does know a lot. You know, he's actually, you know, probably well-versed in all that stuff. And he's been doing this for a long time. Let's see. I think that's about it for him.
Yeah.
"I fear I shall fall asleep if we wait much longer." Okay, so they start talking about needing to, you know, I think he's always kind of just playing people off here. I don't know. If you watch the Grand Maester, you know, he is a manipulator big time. Because he plays the old feeble kind of whatever, like, you know, almost like you could dismiss him, but mm-hmm. he's really a big time player.
Oh, he is.
Yeah, and you wouldn't think so, because what we've heard about Maesters and Maester Lewin and stuff, you know, would kind of lull you into thinking that, oh, okay, he's a good guy. And maybe he is a good guy. Depends on your, you know, where your alliances are.
Yeah. Just a line I have here. So after he kind of sees this thing, this is when we start kind of getting into the this is where we kind of start getting into what's going to happen. And this is where they say they're kind of waiting. Should we wait for Robert? Should we wait for Sir Barris and Selmy? No. Mm-hmm. And they talk about as the others took their, or actually that just hasn't happened yet, but it's happening kind of right
sure,
now.
Sure, yeah.
As the others took their accustomed seat, it struck Eddard Stark forcefully that he did not belong here, in this room with these men. He remembered what Robert had told them in the crypts below Winterfell. I am surrounded by flatterers and fools.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of interesting here. And then he says, we are but five, he pointed out. And then they say, Lord Stannis took himself to Dragonstone not long after the king went north, Varys said, and our Sir Gallant Barristan no doubt rides beside the king as he makes his way through the city. Perhaps we best wait for Sir Barristan and the king to join us. Renly Baratheon laughed out loud. If we wait for my brother to grace us with his royal presence, it could be a long sit.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he's basically not gonna show up.
Yeah, which is I think actually, because correct me if I'm wrong, Sir Ezra, mm-hmm. but I believe actually the next time we get a small council meeting actually in the books, or the next time we see one is when yeah. Robert is there and he's yelling at Ned about how he wants to kill Daenerys.
That could be, yeah, because I think like, and I know in the Arya chapter she just continues to talk about how,
I mean, they're happening yeah, we just don't get like a POV scene,
right?
Of
she
one.
Says father is arguing at the council, stuff right. like that, so yeah. Yeah, but I think you're the next time we
get
see
a
them,
POV one, yeah,
I think you're right. Something that just caught my attention there while you were reading that,
mm-hmm.
The small council here. Members that sit on it. So you get the Hand of the King, the Lord Commander of the King's Guard, the Master of Coin, the Master of Laws, the Master of Whisperers, and the Master of Ships, and then the Grand Maester. So, what I was going to do really quickly, because you said Stannis.
Yeah.
So which position does Stannis hold?
Is he because Master of Ships?
Because he's not there is what is I was going to kind of...
Is he Master of Ships?
He is, yeah. Master of Ships. And Renly is Master of Laws, you know, so that's not, we don't always talk about that in the, or we don't always see that in the show.
Right.
You know, so I just thought it was interesting to point out that Stannis does, he had just recently gone back to Dragonstone.
Yeah. Why?
Yeah. I think you know, he might've been suspecting different things as well. I don't know.
We don't know actually. Do we know when Melisandre shows up? In like in the show, she's just there,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think they probably say it in A Clash of Kings, like first chapter of
they
A Clash
do,
of Kings.
Yeah.
I can't remember if she had been there, if he kind of summons her once he's gonna start making plans, or if she's already been there, because that could be a reason as why, is maybe she'd already shown up or something.
True.
Maybe she's seen things in her, told him something.
In the flames. Yeah, maybe she'd already seen some stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so real quickly though, so let's see, anybody else we wanted to mention there? Peter Baelish is Master of Coin, mm-hmm. Renly, as I said, Master of Laws, Stannis Master of Ships, Varys Master of Whisperers, and Sir Barristan Selmy is Lord Commander of the King's Guard and should stay Lord Commander for a long, long time, but people are not very smart in this.
Right.
Series. Okay. All right. What else we got here?
So this is basically...
We're in debt.
Yeah, we're in... Yeah, well, not yet. There's an urgent matter. The king... there's an urgent matter. Littlefinger smiled and handed the paper to Ned. It bore the royal seal. Ned broke the wax with his thumb and flattened the letter to consider the king's urgent command. Was there... And then he's in disbelief. Was there no end to Robert's folly?
Mm-hmm.
And to do this in his name... Gods be good, he swore. What Lord Eddard means to say, Lord Renly announced, is that his grace has instructed us to stage a great tournament in the honor of his appointment. Then they kind of go back and forth. How much? Littlefinger asks. 40,000 golden dragons to the champion, 20,000 to the man who comes in second, and another 20 to the winner of the melee. 90,000 gold pieces, Littlefinger sighed. And we must not neglect the other cost. Robert will want a... prodigious feast. That means cooks, carpenters, serving girls, singers, jugglers, and fools. Fools we have in plenty, Lord Renly said. Grand Maester Pycelle, will the treasury bear this expense? What treasury is that? Littlefinger replied. And then they kind of go back and forth and talk a little bit. And then Ned says, are you claiming that the crown is $3 million in debt? The crown is more than $6 million in debt, Lord Stark. And mm-hmm. then he goes on to say, Aaron, they talk about we owe some money to some Dornish, the High Septims. We owe it to some Tairoshi trading cartels.
The cartels, man.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
And you know what? This is a scene, and this is so in the show. If you go back and you watch season one of the show, the script is much more straight from the books. Like, this scene is one where you can kind of tell, like, the script feels straight from the books, because it pretty much is.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And right here, Ned was aghast. Aerys Targaryen left the treasury flowing with
gold.
How did you let this happen?
Yeah. I'll tell you how they let it happen is that they don't have a press secretary. Okay. The realm does not know. I mean, it's crazy that they don't know, right? I mean, you know, how much, I mean, they're keeping this a big secret, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. And the Lannisters probably want them to, mm-hmm. you know, because it's just like, yeah, I don't know. I think if more people realize that they were going more and more in debt towards the Lannisters, like, the Lannisters are ruling the kingdom, mm-hmm. you know? So it's very interesting to me and actually they've kind of run, they're moving to the faith now. Mm-hmm. They've had to hit up cartels, mm-hmm. you know? It's like, Jiminy Christmas, man.
And here's my question. Did Aerys Targaryen leave a treasury flowing with gold, or did Tywin Lannister leave a treasury flowing with gold?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, yeah, good call. They probably had a massive surplus for a long time, right?
Yeah.
But I wonder if, as you said, it just needs to be managed well. It comes down to that. That's why he said they bring up Jon Arryn, you know, because they say he was a prudent man. How is it that he let this happen?
And then they say that, yeah. And then
yeah.
They said it was Robert. Robert just demanded, no, get me the money. I don't care.
And that's crazy. That's just crazy. And I think this is all, in the second half of this chapter, we really start to see, I think, that information, as well as all these past little tidbits with Robert, has Ned going, what is going on? What's up with my friend? You know, this is not who I, it's not the guy that I know and remember.
Right. Yeah. It's not the guy that I grew up with, you know, and sometimes that happens, you know, sometimes the guys you grow up with, you know, they change. So
true. Exactly. It does. So now, he wants to kind of put it off, you know. He asks about the, you know, can the treasury bear it? No, obviously we can't. We got to ask around. He proceeds towards the Tower of the Hand, and then, unless there's something else you wanted to kind of, you know,
look into that.
But I think he starts to kind of reflect on basically everything that has gone wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just thinking through all the different.
And he basically just leaves. He's like, I need to speak with Robert. And they say, speak to him, but we're still going to make his plans. He says, another day. He's like, and then he kind of backs off, and he's like,
forgive me. Yeah.
I'm tired.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He said the last fortnight of their journey had been a misery. Sansa blamed Arya and told her that it should have been Nymeria who died. And Arya was lost after she heard what had happened to the butcher's boy. Sansa cried herself to sleep. Arya brooded silently all day long, and Eddard Stark dreamed of a frozen hell reserved for the Starks of Winterfell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mm-hmm. you know, not having a good time. So he crossed the outer yard, passed under he passed under that, heads over to the Tower of the Hand. This is where Littlefinger intercepts him and tells him he's going the wrong way.
Yeah.
He says, come with me. And this is where you have to think back to that Catelyn chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes him, basically heads him back to, where does he actually take him to?
Yeah, though? Well, you know, it's totally weird. Every time I listen to this chapter, I'm like, wow, this just seems so intricate, mm-hmm. the way they actually have to do it. Because in the show, I think he actually just has him come meet him there. Like, he tells him, hey, this is where you need to come.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's just some kind of joke.
It just says Littlefinger led him into a tower, mm-hmm. down a stair. Mm-hmm. Across a small sunken courtyard and along a deserted corridor where many empty suits of armor stood sentinel along the walls.
Yeah.
There were relics of the Targaryens, black steel with dragon scales cresting their helms, now dusty and forgotten. That's crazy. How is this stuff still just up in the mm-hmm. keep? You know what I mean?
Well, and then like they have to climb down a cliff. They have to climb down mm-hmm. this cliff. And like, it's just so weird thinking like this is... Like, Eddard Stark and Littlefinger are, like, climbing down this little cliff here. They're like, there's niches in the rock. Try not to fall to your death. And, you know, every time I hear that, it just always seems so odd and, like, out of place. And then they get on this little path, and it's just weird. But they're on horses, and then Littlefinger, like, kind of takes off, and then Ned has to kind of chase him, and then they end up at a brothel.
Okay. Yeah.
And he says, "Your wife is inside." And then Ned's like, "That's the final insult. Brandon was too kind to you," Ned said as he slammed the small man back against a wall and shoved a dagger up under his pointed little chin, or his pointed little chin beard. Just think about that for a second. That Ned takes a dagger up to Littlefinger's throat.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that may come back.
Yep.
Then he ends up going inside because Roderick Crissell's there. Now I actually kind of like the way they do this in the show.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of funny and it works. And it also saves, you know, a couple page or like a page or something here where Kat just kind of sticks her head out and she's like, "Ned," you know what I mean? I kind of like that better.
Right. Yeah. Cause it's just a little bit, it's just an extra person popping in there.
Yeah.
Roderick stepping out. Yeah. Yep. And he says, "My lady," you know, he whispered in wonderment. "Oh, very good," said Littlefinger, closing the door. "You recognize her."
Yeah.
"I feared you'd never come, my lord," she whispered against his chest. "Peter has been bringing me reports. He told me of your troubles with Arya and the young prince. How are my girls?" And he says they're both in mourning, full of anger, you know. And so they kind of just catch up here a little bit, you know, just a tidbit. And actually, Ned doesn't know.
He thinks Bran's dead.
Yeah. Because she says it's Bran. The reasons why she had come down to speak to him, and he hadn't had any updates. He believes he's still in a coma, right? You know.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason she would leave him is if he was dead, you know, or something bad had happened. You know, and that's not the case though. So, and he looks and he's at one point he sees her her hands. He saw her hands then. The awkward way she held them, the raw red scars, the stiffness of the last two fingers on her left hand. "You've been hurt." He took her hands in his own, turned them over. "Gods, those are deep cuts. A gash from a sword, or how did this happen, my lady?" And then she goes on to kind of explain, you know, how she, as we've covered in other chapters, how she defended Bran and was cut by the dagger.
Yeah, and then we get to this big one. Right here.
Yeah.
"So he listened and she told it all, from the fire in the library tower to Varys and the guardsmen and Littlefinger. And when she was done, Eddard Stark sat dazed beside the table, the dagger in his hand. Bran's wolf had saved the boy's life, he thought dully. What was it that Jon had said when they found the pups in the snow? Your children were meant to have these pups, my lord. And he had killed Sansa's, and for what? Was it guilt he was feeling or fear? If the gods had sent these wolves, what folly had he done?"
Yeah, dude.
Wow.
Dude, it's crazy that that's what he thinks about, you know? Like, that's what he thinks about. And so, to us now doing a reread, it's like that stands out so much because it's like, what could happen to him? What will the gods punish him for this, you know?
Right. What gods sent the dire wolves to them?
Yeah.
We're not getting into that discussion again.
No, no. But it's like, does his, as we know, we said this is a reread, his death later on, is it have something to do with Lady, you know?
Like, Stoneheart. No, I'm joking.
But, you know, I mean, he's very much like realizing that the pups are a big deal. And this is that first indication, you know, to where they have some magical properties, and like, so it's almost like at this point we feel like Sansa is going to be, you know, vulnerable going forward because her wolf is dead and it was killed by her father, you know, and it's just like, oh my gosh. So I don't know.
Yeah,
and there's more though.
There is more. So then she talks a little bit about that, and then this is another thing I just think is huge. "Ned rose and paced the length of the room. If the queen had had a role in this, or gods forbid, the king himself. No, I will not believe that. Yet even as he said the words, he remembers the chill on the morning of the on the Barrowlands, and Robert talk of sending hired knives to kill the Targaryen princess. He remembered Rhaegar's infant son and the red ruin of his skull and the way the king had turned away, as he had turned away in Dany's audience hall not so long ago. He could still hear Sansa pleading as Lyanna had pleaded once."
Dude, it's just like,
so there's two moments.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's maybe more where he thinks about Robert and then Rhaegar and then Lyanna and kind of Lyanna pleading to him, "Promise me, Ned." So just something to point out.
Well, yeah, and he's seeing this, you know, this duality, right? He's seeing his friend, you know, Robert Baratheon in Dary's audience hall just turn away and not really care, you know. And so the line that stands out is he says, if the queen had a role in this, or God's forbid, the king himself, he thought it.
Yeah.
And the reason he thought it is because, you know, Robert's talked about killing children. He's talked about killing, you know, Targaryen princesses. He remembers the killing of Rhaegar's son, and that there was no, he wasn't outraged. Right. He just turned away, you know, same way with the killing of Lady. Just turned away, you know.
Yeah, and we still technically, I mean, it's believed that it was Joffrey who hired him, but still technically, I think it's kind of ambiguous.
Mm-hmm,
It's still kind of left open, but it seems more commonly Tyrion and Jaime and Cersei are all kind of, there's lines where they reference that it was most likely Joffrey.
Yeah, for sure.
We had to look at this a couple weeks ago when we were talking about the dagger, and
yeah,
we had to dive a little bit deeper into it. So
yeah, and Littlefinger says though that most likely the king did not know,
right.
But that's Littlefinger. It would not be the first time our good Robert is practiced at closing his eyes to things he would rather not see.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't really want to, you know. There's just things he doesn't want to deal with, so he's kind of like, you know, good with all that. So now, what are we going to do though? You know, so Kat has brought this dagger, you know, and showed it to Ned, and we've got to do something, don't we? What are we going to do? Do we take this to the king? What if the king is, see, that's why it's so key. What if the king is a part of it?
Right.
What do you do at this point? Mm-hmm. You know? So the accusation is treason either way. Accuse the king and you will dance with ill and pain before the words are out of your mouth. The queen, if you can find proof, if you can make Robert listen, then perhaps. We have proof, Ned said. We have the dagger. This, Littlefinger flipped it, you know, casually, end over end. Mm-hmm. Sweet piece of steel, but it cuts two ways, my lord. The imp will no doubt. So they actually do say, I think they lay the dagger. This is where we had talked in chapters past, but Peter Baelish says that that it is the imp's.
Yeah.
That's kind of right. His.
Okay, here, listen to this real quick, sir. I don't mean to get off subject here.
It's fine.
But just hear me out on this. And then, so he's talking about, like, who have you told about these plans? I told Peter our suspicions about John Arryn's death, Catelyn promised. He has promised to help you find the truth. This was not news that Eddard Stark welcomed,
mm-hmm.
but it was true enough that they needed help, and Littlefinger had been almost a brother to Cat once. It would not be the first time that Ned had been forced to make common cause with a man he despised. Very well, he said, thrusting the dagger into his belt. You spoke of Varys. Does the eunuch know all of it? Not from my lips, Catelyn said. You did not wed a fool, Eddard Stark. But Varys has his ways of learning things that no man could. He has some dark art, Ned. I swear it. So it's just interesting here that Ned is just kind of questioning Cat on secrets. He's just kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that's a big thing I keep finding online with the whole R plus L equals J thing.
Yeah.
Is that why didn't Ned tell Cat? It seems like, you know what I mean? It seems like he would want to tell Cat if Jon Snow is whatever, which is still the most common theory. So why didn't Ned tell Cat that Jon Snow is actually not his bastard?
Because Cat wouldn't.
One, people say like maybe Cat is kind of hot-headed, as we kind of see, like where she lets Jaime go and these things. But
True. But
the thing is that Ned had just met her.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So there is that. So I actually don't think that's why he didn't tell her, because that's what I see a lot of people say is like, well, Cat is kind of hot-headed and you know, these kind of things. But from what we know is that Eddard Stark like met her on the wedding day. He didn't really know her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he maybe that's another reason when he came back, he's like, oh, I can't trust this person because I don't really know them.
Yeah. He doesn't know. Yeah.
He doesn't know them. But another theory I've heard is that he specifically doesn't tell Kat because he actually wants Kat to be mean to Jon, because that way you can keep up the appearance.
And it's more believable.
It's more believable.
Well, the other thing is too, clearly she, you know, maybe he doesn't totally trust her judgment here.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I know he doesn't live to see the whole letting Jaime Lannister go, but like telling Littlefinger right away here, you know, and he's not
keen on it.
He wouldn't have done that, probably, you know. He would have kept that close to the chest. And maybe he does understand the ways of Cord a little bit more. He at least knows the ultimate cost and consequences.
Well, he still runs Winterfell, and he still runs the North. Yeah. And I mean, it's not like you don't have conniving and scheming up there with like the Boltons and, you know, things like that. So,
yeah. So anyways, we had skipped over the part where they claim that it is the Imp's dagger, you know, and so that's established. And when they're talking about proof, you know, let's see. He says the Imp will no doubt swear the blade was lost or stolen while he was at Winterfell. And, you know, with his hiring dead, who is here to give, you know, him the lie? So basically, you know, since they had killed the assassin, or the assassin's right. dead, who's there to kind of, you know, call him out for that? He tossed the knife lightly to Ned. My counsel is to drop that in the river and forget that this was ever, you know, forged.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, good advice, probably. You know, just let the whole thing go and just move on, bury it and move on.
Yeah.
Because they dwell on it, and it's going to take you down a sticky path here.
Yeah, so. And then this is really cool, is you kind of get Ned. This is where you get to see just actually how good of like a ruler Ned is. Mm-hmm. When the door closed behind him, Ned turned back to his wife. This is when Baelish leaves and kind of gives them a moment. He says, "Once you're home, send word to Helmand Tallheart and Galbert Glover under my seal. They are to raise 100 bowmen each and fortify Moat Cailin. 200 determined archers can hold the neck against an army. Instruct Lord Manderly that he is to strengthen and repair all of his defenses at White Harbor and see that they are well manned. And from this day on, I want a careful watch kept over Theon Greyjoy." Interesting. If there's a war, we shall have sore need of his father's fleet. War, there was fear. The fear was plain in Catelyn's face. It will not come to that, Ned. Ned promised her, praying it was true. He took her in his arms again. The Lannisters are merciless in the face of weakness, but Aerys Targaryen learned to his sorrow, but they would not dare attack the North without the power of the realm behind them. It's just interesting. Mm-hmm. Ned immediately is like, okay, do this.
Yep.
Just like when he's sitting in the council room, and we get really his like only one act as Hand of the King, and he's like, Sir Beric Dondarrion.
Dude, this is unreal. I mean, it is actually so cool, you know. Send word here, do this, do that. Yeah, like you said. Basically almost, I mean, he does everything but call the banners. Yeah. I mean, he's like, it's kind of
he does everything
secret.
Right.
Yeah, it's like a secret way of calling. Like, I mean, that sends a signal, first of all. Can you imagine being on the other end of that?
Yeah.
Being Lord Manderly and going, oh, shit.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah. You know, our like Lord Stark has gone down to King's Landing, you know, and all they know is, like, Bran is in a coma, something happened. Right. Then they might hear rumors that there was an assassination attempt on the boy. Right. And next thing you know, you're getting word from, you know, from Lord Stark to secretly start, you know, prepping. Right. Fortify Moat Cailin.
It's also interesting who Ned calls for and who he doesn't.
True. True.
Now, Ger may have not written this character yet, because, you know, he wrote this first, but he doesn't say anything about Roose Bolton, who has quite a big army in the North. You know what I mean? He doesn't say anything about him. He's like, no, Galbert Glover and Manderly of White Harbor. So it's just interesting that that's what he calls it.
Helmand Tallheart.
And then when he talks about Theon Greyjoy, does he think Theon's... Because the line is weird.
He says, I want a careful watch kept over Theon Greyjoy.
Yeah. So that makes it seem like Theon could turn against us.
Right.
But then he immediately follows it with, we may need help from his father.
Yeah, we shall have sore need of his father's fleet.
So is his plan to not send Theon back, but ask for help and say, like, well, we have your son.
Exactly. He's a hostage. He's always been sort of a hostage of the Starks. And that's the thing. It's like he's raised him like
as well as he can.
But at the end of the day, he's a Greyjoy.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, he will be used by Lord Stark if need be. Okay. Winter is coming.
It actually might be the most boss moment of Ed
Dude, it
Stark.
Is. It's, and it's just so crazy because you're right. I always think back to when he acts as king, you know, on the king's behalf. Yeah. Yeah.
And he summons Beric Dondarrion.
Yeah, to take on, you know, the mountain and stuff. And I just think that's just so awesome.
Yeah.
But, dude.
I, that is a scene also, I think. I just, it's cool in the book, too. But I just think I think it's much cooler in the show because he just... In the show, they don't have time to explain that he's kind of desperately searching for someone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's still cool in the book because he basically do it, and Grand Maester Pycelle is like, what are you doing? He's like,
they have no time to stop.
They have no time to stop.
Yeah, no
time. But in the show, he just stands up and he's just like, Beric Dondarrion, I summon you.
But, you know, even in the book, it's like he searched
it's
the
cool.
halls
it's super cool,
in his mind, right? Looking for an honorable, you know, knight, someone who he could trust. And think about who he picks.
Yeah.
Sorry, in this another chapter, but Beric Dondarrion, who's betrothed to a Dane, all this stuff. I mean, it's
it's all connected. Yeah, and then that's here we go. Just here, that was the most dangerous part. That they talk about. What about lore? War. Mm-hmm. That was the most dangerous part. New, because he's gonna have to present proof. Ned knew all justice flows from the king. He told her, "When I know the truth, I must go to Robert and pray that he is the man I think he is." He finished silently, and not the man I fear he has become.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, that's the thing. Right now, what he is secretly doing, Sir Matt, he is secretly prepping for a potential war with his friend. You know? I mean, that's what he's doing. Fortify Moat Cailin. And, like, I mean, don't mess with the North, by the way.
Yeah.
Good grief, man.
Oh, I think he would win, too. I mean, because here's the thing. Is
Get House Tully, you've got the Riverlands.
So,
you know.
Well, so the problem is, well, you, I think a lot of people would say, well, if Robb Stark did it, Eddard could, but the difference would be you wouldn't have Stannis and Renly.
Mm-hmm. True.
And like Highgarden signs with Renly, so it could be just the Starks versus everyone.
Well, that's what I mean. Like you'd have, you'd have the Arryns and you'd have the Tullys,
so you'd still have most everyone, but maybe Highgarden doesn't get involved.
Dorne probably doesn't get involved.
Well, I don't know, actually. There's actually who you could ally with.
That's what I'm saying. Unless they went with this, but not with Robert.
Right.
Right.
No. Yeah,
not with the Lannisters.
The only way you could pull it off would be if Eddard Stark would have to say, tell Dorne, you can have the South.
Yeah. And he wouldn't give a crap.
Yeah.
He would just, I mean, again, it just would just go
north.
Back to.
So you just say, just give them whatever you take. King's Landing, the Stormlands, and.
See, because he doesn't want the throne. And, could you imagine? What would he do? He would just become King of the North.
Yeah.
He'd just be like, we're good up here. You know? I mean, it's just crazy to think about.
So
anyways, there's that chapter for you guys. There's some, just some neat little people mentioned. I just want to go over some of those that were mentioned. We talked about all the bannermen that were mentioned and things. Vaen Poole, I think, is cool. The Stewart, I just keep, you know, bringing him up or whatever because of his daughter. We get to meet Renly. We get to go. We get introduced kind of to. We heard about anyways. Stannis, and just a lot of different characters mentioned here. So it's all kind of starting to come together. I think you know. So and also you know, in calling out Tallheart and Glover and Manderly, are those his most trusted?
I would have to say.
Right? I mean, those are the houses up there that he really trusts.
Yeah. Manderly and Glover.
Right. And they're also, you know, they're also strong houses, too, in the north, you know, and things. So,
not the Boltons.
Yeah, no. So, just interesting. Yeah.
All right. Here, so on to a raven.
Yep.
Yeah. So, this one is from Javleek. I don't know. Anyway, all the candidates to be the younger and more beautiful... indeed the women whom the prophecy refers to. So the idea here, there's not one single younger and more beautiful queen, but there are many of them. This is referring to the Valonqar prophecy and Cersei. I, queen you shall be until there comes another, younger and more beautiful to cast you down and take all that you hold dear. Firstly, Maggie does not specifically specify that the more beautiful woman is a queen. She just says that another will cast Cersei down. Secondly, we can enlist everything that Cersei holds dear. Joffrey, Tommen, Marcella, Power, which is kind of the Iron Throne, and Jaime. Taking the above into account, I would argue that there is not one single younger and more beautiful another, but plenty of them. Each one of these women took one thing or something that Cersei held dear. Joffrey and Sansa, Tommen and Margaery, Marcella and Arianne / Illyria, the Iron Throne, Daenerys, Jaime, and Brienne. So Joffrey, the younger and more beautiful lady that took Joffrey from Cersei was Sansa, who inadvertently poisoned him. I dreamt of a maid at a feast with purple serpents in her hair, venom dripping from their fangs.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of interesting there, because the whole, the locket or the pendant she kind of has.
Yeah, in her hair. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. She actually has the what do you call that?
Poison. Yeah.
It's like a thing that you put in your hair. Girls put it in their hair. Yeah. I don't know what it is. Yeah.
Brochure or whatever.
Yeah, whatever like it is.
Although in the books, I don't believe we know actually who poisoned him yet. Tyrion says he does to Jaime, but that's just because he's lying and he's pissed at Jaime at the time. It's when he's leaving.
Mm-hmm.
He says that he does, but he doesn't actually do it that we know of. In the show, it's the Queen of Thorns. I think Baelish also says to Sansa that he did it,
mm-hmm.
Which could still be true. Could be true, but I think it's still a lie. I think it actually probably was still.
Well, it could be all of them interconnected.
And it also could be Tywin who did it.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to get Joffrey out of power. Tommen. In the TV show, we saw how Margaery took Tommen from Cersei. Progressively, he started to care more about his wife than his mother. At the end, Tommen prefers to kill himself rather than to keep living without Margaery. In the books, we read that Tommen is enjoying more of his time around the Tyrells than with his mother. I guess there is going to come a time in which Cersei will finally lose control over him. And I think that's also fair because even in the books, Cersei is very, she does not want Loras Tyrell to be his master at arms, and she wants to get a proper master at arms. And Tommen's like, no, I want Ser Loras. And they kind of go back and forth about that.
Yeah.
Marcella. If we follow logic, Arianne will take Marcella from Cersei. The Martells will eventually join Griff / Aegon's side. Therefore, Marcella is going to be trapped in a war between the family with which she is living right now, and the Lannisters. I guess the situation will lead to her death, and Arianna will have something to do with this. In the TV show, HBO kind of merged Arianna with Illyria. I suppose that's why they decided to make Illyria kill Marcella.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the power Iron Throne side. And finally, we have the Iron Throne, the one thing that Cersei has after losing her children. Daenerys is the only princess / queen that is missing to participate in the casting Cersei down and take all that she holds dear. I guess she will do this when she finally burns King's Landing to the ground. And then we get to Jaime. I don't know if Jaime holds Cersei as something dear, since she truly loves what she truly loves is herself being reflected on him, not Jaime as such. Nonetheless, let's assume she holds Jaime dear. In that case, Brienne of Tarth was the one that took Jaime from Cersei. That's a line here. The queen remembered the maid of Tarth, a huge, ugly, shambling thing who dressed in a man's mail. Jaime would never abandon me for such a creature. My raven never reached him. Elsewise, he would have come. As someone has already written, this is just from a thread or something, Brienne is certainly not more beautiful than Cersei, but mockingly she is called Brienne the Beauty. And of course, Brienne's soul is more beautiful than Cersei's. If it's necessary, the following quotes show Jaime's feelings toward Brienne. Sir Jaime, I am grateful, but you were well away. Why come back? A dozen quips came to mind, each crueler than the one before, but Jaime only shrugged. I dreamed of you, he said. This is just kind of a series of lines. I don't know if they're necessarily in order. The bear was less hairy than that freak. Jamie's golden hand cracked him across the mouth so hard the other knight went stumbling down the steps. His lantern fell and smashed, and the oil spread out, burning. You are speaking of a highborn lady, sir. Call her by her name. Call her Brienne. The light was so dim that Jaime could scarcely see her, though they stood a scant few feet apart. In this light, she could almost be a beauty, he thought. In this light, she could almost be a knight.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's thinking of Cersei. she's been fucking Lancel and Osmond Kettleblack and probably Moon Boy for all I know. Uh-huh. And then he says, talking about TV show territory, I guess Jamie will die in the arms of the woman he loves. That is to say, Brienne.
Interesting. Okay. So
really good. It's just a really well put together threat or kind of subject here.
So the argument is, to go back to the top, I would argue that there's not one single younger or more beautiful another, but plenty of them.
Yeah.
So firstly, Maggie does not specify. So the original thing here is that there's not one single younger or more beautiful queen, but plenty of them. Yeah. So this person's making the case that there's a lot of different
potential. And also potentially that it's not a queen. Per se. Mm-hmm. It just says, I, queen you shall be until there comes another, is the actual line. A lot of people think, oh, another queen. But that's not technically speaking, they're correct. That is not exactly what Maggie the Frog says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, except, okay, Maggie says, I, you know, queen you shall be until there comes another, younger and more beautiful, to cast you down and take all that you hold dear. You know, so that was in A Feast of Crows, chapter 36.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, technically, kind of.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying, for their purposes, for the purposes of this, you know, raven, they've just stopped it at until there comes another. And again, it doesn't say queen, though. It just says another younger and more beautiful to cast you down and take all that you hold dear. So, again, it still works. It's just saying that this person will be younger and more beautiful and cast you down and take all that you hold dear.
Right.
You know, so just a little bit on Maggie the Frog, though. You know, she came to Lannisport as a young woman. You know, so she's been there for quite a bit. It's known that she can kind of, she's like a woods witch type mm-hmm. of thing, you know. When she was 10, Cersei Lannister became, you know, enamored with Prince Rhaegar during the tournament in honor of Viserys' birth. Cersei and her two friends sought out Maggie to learn their futures and which men they would marry. But Jane fled at the sight of Maggie's yellow eyes. Maggie initially refuses to tell the futures of the remaining girls, but grudgingly agreed, faced with Cersei's threats. Using a twisted iron dagger, Maggie drew and drank blood from the girls' thumbs. Maggie allowed Cersei three questions and made the prophecy of Valonqar, High Valyrian, for a little brother, which haunted Cersei thereafter. And then when Melara took her turn, which is her friend, Maggie predicted that she would die young and hinted that it would be by Cersei's hand. Dissatisfied, Cersei threw a jar of potion into Maggie's eyes and fled, leaving Maggie to curse them both. Melara, who begged Cersei never to speak of the prophecy, soon drowned in a well. Cersei never told of Maggie to her father, and there you have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? You know? So it's something that's been eating at her, you know. So the questions that she asks, so she says, "Will I wed the prince?" And then Maggie says, "Never. You will wed the king."
Yeah,
you know,
Robert Baratheon, right?
Yeah. I will be a queen, though. ? I, queen, you shall be until there comes another younger and more beautiful to cast you down and take all that you hold dear. And then Cersei says, "Will the king and I have children?" Oh, I, 6 and 10 for him and 3 for you. Gold shall be their crowns and gold their shrouds, she said. And when your tears have drowned you, the Valonqar shall wrap his hands about your pale white throat and choke the life from you.
Right.
So,
and that's interesting.
So there it is all. In,
and that's the thing that's interesting because I don't know how the show is going to pull that off. And when your tears have drowned you. So Cersei didn't cry in the show when Tommen kills mm-hmm. himself mm-hmm. and she blows up the Sept of Baelor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there would have to be something that would cause her to cry in the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be the loss of Jaime. You know, I mean, I think maybe it's one of those things that we just don't see it.
So perhaps. Maybe there we go. Maybe what if she kills Jaime? What if it's some kind of event where Jaime is riding? Maybe she's just going to blow King's Landing up or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And Jaime dies fighting or something.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, you have Tyrion, and then maybe that's how Tyrion does it or something.
Yeah.
Or I don't know. Or what if it's Brienne of Tarth that kills her? Maybe Jaime dies or something, and then Brienne of Tarth actually kills Cersei. But it would still be kind of the brother, because it would be Jaime killing her through Brienne, because Jaime, you know, caused her to, I don't know.
Yeah, I get you. The relationship between, it won't be as, well, what's weird about this one is that, you know, a lot of the prophecies and things are like vague.
Right.
And it could be
this
multiple
one's
meanings.
Specific.
This is kind of straightforward.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like a lot of it actually does. Cause so, you know, will I wed the prince? Never. You will wed the king. And she does. You know, and will the king and I have children? You know, 6 and 10 for him, and
he has
three
a lot of bastards, yeah.
For you. Yeah. So, which in 3 for you makes me think, too, this whole piece with the her having, I think she's lying about the pregnancy in the show,
yeah.
Or it's going to be a miscarriage or something. It's
right.
Not going to be, you know, it's not going to come to whatever. That won't be birthed. And then, yes. Yeah,
well,
so
she's already had one miscarriage that we know of, so that one wouldn't count as an actual child. So she still could be pregnant.
Yeah, she could. That's why I said that multiple.
I gotcha, yeah.
I said she could be faking, and it could be a miscarriage. Yeah.
Yeah.
She could be either of those things. So, I don't know. Because the reason I've always said that I thought she was faking in the show is because I just think, you know, that's what she does to keep Jaime around.
Yep.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that's what she does.
Yeah. And when
so the only thing that hasn't come through is the Valonqar.
Yeah.
Know,
and when your tears have drowned you,
yeah,
the Valonqar shall wrap his hands around your pale white throat and choke the life from you.
Right. And then people were all trying to figure out what does Valonqar mean? You know, and all that kind of stuff. So that's the key word, and that's sort of why it's called the Valonqar prophecy, is to figure out, that's where we go to prince and princess. If there's any ambiguousness to it or whatever, it's around that word. And
right.
What does it mean? And what could that, you know, who will kill Cersei type of thing,
yeah.
Right? So, because we had people submitting ravens last week just about this, you know, and there are theories that, you know, it could be someone like, like the Hound. Remember you had said.
Yeah, but okay, but here's something. So first she says, will I wed the prince? Never. You will wed the king.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I was looking at the wrong thing. It's when her friend says, will I marry Jaime? Not Jaime or any other man. Yeah. Worms will have your maidenhead. Your death is here tonight, little one.
Can you smell her breath? She is very close. So Cersei does kill her.
Yeah.
Cersei kills her friend. Yeah. You know, and that crazy. It's crazy. You know, and so... People, I remember just last week, people were talking about, could the Hound be the Valonqar? Because it just says, mm-hmm. The Valonqar shall wrap his hands around your pale white throat. So little brother, does that mean her little brother or a little brother or what? You know, it doesn't really say. It just says, mm-hmm. The little brother shall wrap his hands around your pale white throat and cut the and choke the life from you.
Yeah. So, why does Cersei push? Why does Cersei push her in the well?
Well, because she wants to.
Gosh, I've read that chapter, and I just got
to
go back.
I think she wants to tell Tywin. Let me see here, real quick. So dissatisfied, Cersei threw a jar of potion into Maggie's eyes and fled, leaving Maggie to curse them both. Melara, who begged Cersei never to speak of the prophecies, soon drowned in a well. Cersei never told of Maggie to her father. So, yeah, let's see here.
See right here. Melara, this is her page. Then 11 years old, visited Maggie the Frog with Cersei Lannister and Jane Faemon during the tournament in honor of Viserys' birth in 276. I'm just going to skip a little bit here. Maggie told her that she would die that night and her death was close. Many years later, Cersei told Tyena of Myr, that's the girl she's kind of hooking up with,
mm-hmm.
And she's trying to, like, force herself on her. Like, she's thinking about how Robert used to do that to Cersei, and she's
right.
Trying to see if it feels good. And that Maggie's prophecy had come true. Melyria drowned in a well. It is implied that Cersei herself killed Melyria by pushing her into the well and leaving her to drown. I'm just trying to remember why she did that. Do we know? It says, A Feast for Crows, Chapter 39, Cersei 9. I just don't remember specifically...
Yeah, whether
why,
she actually
why she pushed her in the well.
There is hinting in the book. I'd have to go read those.
We'll have
chapters.
To dig deeper into that.
Yeah, I'd have to go read those because
or send us a raven and tell us. Yeah.
Well, one of the obvious, like, and I have to go read it again, but I think it's because she wanted to marry Jaime.
Yeah.
You know, and because she asked, will I marry Jaime? You know, and I think that pisses Cersei off because no one can have Jaime except
right.
for her.
You know, that's probably
it. So I think that's a large part of it. There might have been more to it, but I think that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. All right. That was a fun little rabbit hole to get into.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay.
Anything else here? Any other?
Nope. This week? That's kind of it here. So,
okay. Yeah. So make sure guys, you know, send those ravens to btkcast@gmail.com and, you know, Sir Matt or myself, we'll see those and we'll get those going for you. This week during Man the Wall, we actually don't have a
knighting
ceremony, but we will come back with one next week. Again, send us those house words and, you know, hit us up on Patreon. We can get your title and everything in there so we can mm-hmm. we can do the knighting ceremonies and stuff. We've got a few people who we're just waiting on them to message us back, but
yep.
no rush. You know, it's all optional too. So,
absolutely.
You know, we'll get back to that. And we are, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we are working on that Patreon exclusive series, The Black Council Episode 2. For the month of July here, and it's all going to be about the Dance of Dragons. So, mm-hmm. you know, I saw Sir Gibbs actually enjoyed the Black Council episode 1, which was, yeah. you know, talking about Aegon the Conqueror's sons.
I believe that is 3 hours worth of content.
It's 3 hours, yes.
worth of content. So
we are just discussing, speculating, because we don't just yeah. summarize the stories yeah. for you in that Black Council stuff. We actually kind of make some of our own predictions and, mm-hmm. and really try to discuss it and piece it out. Yeah. So,
an interesting fact, I just want to say this. People sometimes ask us like, oh man, when we see like comments about like just that people really like the show and how well it's produced and stuff like that. Interesting fact, I just thought I'd share this for people, is that Sir Ezra and I actually do this in one take.
Yeah, it's true.
We do.
Good
call. Sometimes when we get going really long, we just one take the whole thing. I think we've had to stop the podcast one time in the entire time we've done it.
That's true. That's true.
And it was, I actually don't think anyone can tell where it is. If you can, If you think you can, send us a raven. If you can find it, send us a raven, letting uh-huh. us know. It'd be like, I think this is where you did it.
Uh-huh.
And we'll do a giveaway. We'll send you some of the Game of Thrones pins, the pins, bending pins.
Oh, I'll even go bigger than that. I'll find something.
Maybe we'll send a Patreon like a exclusive shirt or something.
Even, you know,
if you can find it, the only hint I'll give is that it's in a follow up Friday.
It's
episode.
In a follow up Friday episode.
but the entire time we've done it, we've only had to stop the show one time.
Yeah, and we're proud of that, just so you guys know.
That's just
well, and also that we've always said too, that is, you know, a lot of times on the fly here, it's just so much content to remember in
right.
one sitting. You've got like these books are massive, and then we've got the histories and everything else. So we're trying to tie right. it all together. So it's
even in other chapters, you'll have something referenced. So it's not like an entire event is in one chapter. It's
yeah.
referenced in so many other chapters. You may, to get like one specific line about something, you may have to go over here because
yeah.
it was
yeah.
like the line you're looking for is over here.
Right.
So like you never get the whole story. Usually, it's always
unless
it's like a POV, and even then sometimes yeah.
You know, I was gonna tell Sir Matt this later, but I'll tell him now. I've stopped watching the HBO series.
Yeah,
because we're doing
it's too. I remember the show really well. I just have to really grind out the books because there's so much.
Yeah, and I think sometimes there's slight differences, and you don't want to. We'd love to talk about the show. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, and any raven you send us about the show, we'll talk about it.
Heck yeah,
absolutely. And anytime I remember something that's different, I'm saying I think this is how they did
yeah.
it in the show.
Sure,
because there are some things I like better. About the show.
Right.
Even show specific scenes. I've mentioned this before. The advantage of the show in some ways is, especially go watch season one, characters who didn't have POV chapters in the first couple of books, like Cersei and Jaime,
yeah.
you get some of their story, and whether it's canon or not is besides the point.
Yeah.
But I think it just kind of expands their character.
Yep.
Like the scene where Jaime is talking to Ned. And it's mm-hmm. in the throne room where he's talking about, you know, it was right here
yep.
where I watched it and nothing happened. And you,
yeah.
but then it ends with Jaime kind of saying like, it was a terrible thing.
Yeah.
It was a terrible thing. And so if you had just read Game of Thrones and watched it, if you had just read the first book and watched it, you'd be like, well, gosh, Jaime's a dick. But knowing what happens later,
yeah.
it's kind of like, no, actually there's that kind of redeeming quality
for Jamie
of Jamie as he obviously turns.
Because he's talking about Ned's father and his brother,
right?
Who were killed by the Mad King.
Who were killed by the Mad King, and he talks about it was like a terrible thing.
And not that he's trying to justify himself, but he says, you know, however many knights it was and lords
stood there,
honorable men.
He says like it felt like justice.
And stood and watched.
And then Ned Stark says like, is that what you tell yourself? But you know, like it's Jamie trying to, and that's one thing I love about the show is you get these kind of extra scenes and stuff like that, and I think it works well to kind of build characters and stuff like that. So
yeah, you know, cool. I was just reading a Daenerys chapter too, and I was looking up some Ser Barristan Selmy stuff, and he goes through a similar type of thing when he goes to pledge himself to her services. Mm-hmm. Has to answer for all that stuff that happened to his father.
Yeah,
you know, and then serving another king and things. So he's one of the most honorable men, you know, in all of the realm. Mm-hmm. So just crazy.
Yeah,
cool stuff.
So, well, all right, everyone, it is time to say farewell. We want to thank you for playing a Game of Thrones. In the next episode, we will be discussing chapter 21, Tyrion 3. And I will say real quick, addendum, last week I said the wrong chapter that we would be covering this week. So I probably should have fixed that at the beginning of the show. As I just said, we won't take it. So we're not out of here changing it. But quick apology for that on the wiki where I normally look. It goes up and down, not left and right.
Yeah,
and so I was looking right, and I was like, Daenerys. And then I was like, okay, jumping into Monday, I always listen to the next chapter for the week. And it was like Eddard, and I was like, well, I jacked that up.
No, that's totally fine. Totally understandable. Another quick plug too. iTunes reviews.
Absolutely.
We love to have some iTunes reviews.
Are always huge.
You know,
for
so
us.
if you're enjoying, we get people who've said they've been listening for a couple months, and then they come out of, you know, and send us a message and stuff, and it's good to hear from those folks, you know. So if you've been around listening and you wouldn't mind to take a little time and get us an iTunes review, it does definitely help the show.
That's an absolutely free way to drastically help the show.
Yep,
everyone,
for sure,
huge.
So if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, or leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week, and remember that a Lannister always pays their debts.